How the Principles of Adventure Yield Profitable Investment Results, featuring Keith Fitzgerald on this episode of Unlock Your Wealth Today, Your Life Fully Invested. Welcome to Unlock Your Wealth Today, Your Life Fully Invested. I'm your purveyor of prosperity and host, Heather Wagenhals, and on this episode, I'm making success simple with investing guru Keith Fitzgerald, and we're going to talk about adventures and investing and what they have to do with each other. Not only does he have 37 years of market experience, he is also a regular guest if you watch Varney & Company, and he is a sought-after, respected investment professional, and he's got some exciting things coming up. But probably one of the most exciting things is that I met him at Freedom Fest. As you know, it's coming up in a couple of months. Be sure to check the link at unlockyourwealth.com/freedomfest for your discounts for special Unlock Your Wealth viewers. But I met him at Freedom Fest, and I was so compelled because I was working on another show at the time when I had the opportunity to meet him. And I thought, this guy is great for our show. And I'm super excited because he has such a breadth and depth of life experience. And it's those specific things that help him make the investment decisions that he has done so successfully for all of his clients. So let's talk to Keith and see what we can learn about the principles of adventure and how they parlay into the principles of investing. Welcome to the show, Keith. It's so great to have you on Unlock Your Wealth Today.
Thanks so much for letting me come on. It's a real honor. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm so excited. So to give the folks watching some backstory, I actually met you at Freedom Fest, and it's coming up here in a couple months. It's one of my favorite holidays. And the Way of the Renaissance Man, Jim Woods, is the one that introduced us because you appeared on his podcast. And I loved how he described the most incredible sounds you never want to hear. And which is part of one of the reasons why I think you're such an amazing person to talk to. A Renaissance man yourself with all of your incredibly varied and deep interests. Martial arts, one that we have in common. Talk about what that sound is and what that means.
Sure. Well, so you know, the last sound you never want to hear came from a conversation Jim and I were having when I had just finished practicing some of my martial arts, including the use of a katana, a long samurai sword. And Jim said, "Oh my gosh, you know, what is it? What would that have been like?" And I said, "Well, I said, close your eyes and stand very, very still."
There's a lot of trust there.
Yeah. And Jim said, "Okay." So anyway, you know, I basically took the sword and I ran it by his head. And the samurai sword makes a very distinct sound in the air because of the way it's shaped, because of the way it's made. And quite literally, if we'd been living several hundred years ago, that would have been the last sound you heard, this. But, you know, the interesting thing about that, right, is it also is a sound of what you are as a person in your heart, the kokoro, the spirit of who you are. So the samurai carried that blade not to kill people. They carried that blade to live because that was the expectation every time they went out of the house. And not many people know that in today's world, especially in the West.
You know, one of the things that's this real curious that I thought was a great connection, because you have the Bushido warrior connection, and I was fortunate enough to be able to co-author a book about a decade or so ago with some really great minds, and it was called Bushido Business. And I applied personal finance principles, and I combined them with the Bushido warrior's code. But you have such an eclectic mix of experiences, and you derive, you're extremely successful as an investor. You're a regular guest on the Fox channel and other investing and business channels, and you're relied on as a resource. And I know you have some really great things we're going to talk about coming up that's on the horizon for you. But as we talk about this, you know, Can we derive investing principles from anywhere in life and kind of share some of
them? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, this is the beauty of it, right? Is that if you follow your passions, then sooner or later, you're going to unlock elements that make those passions possible that are applicable in other portions of your life. So for example, my great-grandfather was a fighter pilot in World War I. And he used to talk to me very seriously as a young man. He used to rack me across the chest with his cane, say, "Mr. Keith," you know, and I knew there was getting ready to be a point made every time he did that. And, you know, one of the things he said was, you know, look, if you're going to say something, you say it with conviction, you say it because you mean it. He said, your handshake, your word, that's your bond. He says, the modern world is going to get much more complicated. We're going to rely on lawyers, and that's not the way it should be. He said, you never forget that your handshake and your word is who you are as a person, and you pursue everything from that. So whether it's martial arts, whether it's my interest in cars and music and motorcycles, you know, there are elements of all of those things that in my mind apply very, very specifically to investments. I mean, especially when it comes to money.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think about the Warrior's Code, and I think about, you know, you mentioned motorcycles. And so I used to have a CBR 600 in college, the white with red and blue stripes on it.
Yeah. I love the motorcycles, you know, especially when it comes to money on a couple different levels, because, you know, my wife and I like to tour for very long distances. And, you know, I do that. I make it a point of doing that every single year, sometimes several times a year. My belief is that if I have what I call boots on the ground, I can readily ascertain from an investment perspective what trends are coming, what trends are going, what are people interested in, where's the money moving. For example, you know, one of the last great trips I took, I made it a point of following the immigrant wagon trails across the American West. And I did it for a couple reasons. Number one, I did it because I was on my way to Freedom Fest, which is one of my favorite conferences as well. But I also have in my family ancestors who crossed in covered wagons from the East Coast to Oklahoma. So I wanted to see what they lived through. I wanted to ride, if I could, the exact same trails that they had been on. You know, so I went through this on the motorcycles, and along the way, I had to deviate because of wildfires and lightning storms, and believe it or not, even Bigfoot, which is a whole other story in itself. But nonetheless, you know, you learn very quickly if you're going to concentrate. You have to prepare ahead of time. You have to make sure your kit is up to spec. You have to, and this is just like seeking a proper investment or a trade. You know, does it meet my criteria? Have I got all my ducks in a row? Do I understand the risks involved? Do I have a contingency plan? Where am I going? Why am I going? How am I getting there? These are all things that translate into the modern financial markets. And not a lot of people realize that. Motorcycling actually, in my opinion, motorcycling, high performance driving actually make you a better investor.
That's really curious. And I remember your journey because I was so fortunate that you shared it with all
of us.
That's
right. You were there that year. That's right.
Yes. And you told us all about it. But you know, you're so good about documenting your life and your path with investing. And by the way, for those that are on Instagram, what's your Instagram handle so folks can follow you?
Well, my Instagram handle is @keith.fitz.gerald. And then my Twitter handle is @fitz_keith. And I, you know, I use the Twitter more for trading and the Instagram more for just pictures of my life. But, you know, I'd be honored if people would care enough to come visit me every now and then.
Well, I know I'm a big follower. So, and I always like, and I try to comment on your posts.
Thank you.
Too, wherever
yes, you
I
do.
Find a connection.
Well, I'm a complete social media novice, so I appreciate it very much.
Well, you're doing very well at it. If just keep documenting your life and your journey, and that's essentially what social media is to be able to document that, especially because, you know, one of my favorite books was Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Yep. And I've had tons of cars, and I love tinkering on cars, and I love muscle cars too, you know.
Yeah.
One of my fun cars that I had was a 1979 Macho Trans Am.
Whoa!
So, I know, total muscle car, you know. It was a very Arizona thing, you know. Girls in Arizona are all about their trucks and their Trans Ams.
Yeah.
And you know, but You know, one of the things that I learned, and at a time when I grew up, we got to tinker on them a lot more than we can now because there wasn't all of the sophisticated electronics.
Yep.
But sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with older cars, there's not always a part available and you have to, you know, figure out how to solve a problem differently. How does that approach work with investing? You know, how do we... Because we want to mitigate problems up front by making the right stock selection or investment selection, regardless of what it is. But what happens, how do we create contingency plans? You know, you mentioned
I'll give you a real example. It's drawn from that. So I recently restored a first production year 1977 BMW R100 RS. Now that's a mouthful, but there are a couple of things that are historically significant about that bike. It was the very first motorcycle ever designed in a wind tunnel. It was one of the smoothest, remains one of the smoothest bikes ever designed. The coefficient of drag is so low that today almost every bike with a fairing is in some way or another related to work that Hans Muth, the designer, did on that bike all those years ago. And as I was restoring that, there are no synchro meshes, there's no modern braking systems, there's no, you know, nifty Kino computer controls. So not only did I have to learn about how the bike was constructed, but I had to learn about why it was constructed the way it was in order to rebuild it properly, in order to make it run right. And so, you know, that's the interesting part. So when you translate that to investing, right, a lot of people hear about a stock or they hear about some interesting thing that's mentioned in a magazine, or they hear somebody like me talk about something on one of the news appearances I make. You know, those kind of things. And they think, that's a great idea. But they don't take the time to figure out the how does it work and why does it work and does it fit in my portfolio component to this. So, you know, just because you have a hammer doesn't mean everything's a nail. And that's the corollary. You know, when I was rebuilding that bike, not only did I have to track down parts that fit, I had to track down parts that worked. And when you're investing, it's very important that you draw the same equation. And it's not as complicated as it sounds. Wall Street likes it complicated because they want investors confused and uncertain. They spent millions of dollars knowing that confused, uncertain investors trade more. And that's an opportunity to separate investors from their money. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that to happen. What I want to happen is individual investors to be successful. And the way you take away Wall Street's advantage is to know your tool set, to know how you're doing it. And to me, it's very simple. You find the six unstoppable trends that have made more money than any other trend since the history of time. You line those up with must-have companies that are changing the world. And I don't mean like must-have technology or must-have medicine or whatever. I'm talking about companies that I call global challengers that are literally rewriting history. For example, Apple is one, Uber is not. Apple is a must-have because of its pivot into medical devices, because every time it releases something, it changes the way the world works. Uber is simply a new way to call a taxi to get from point A to point B. It's fungible. You can do it on a scooter. You can do it on horseback. You can do it on a motorcycle. You don't need a fancy pants app.
Right.
But that's all Uber is. So it's nice to have versus must-have. And then finally, the last piece is, you know, in a motorcycle, you're moving down the road, often at high speeds. You know, or on a track or whatever it is, you know, safety is a very serious issue. So much more so than a car where you're encapsulated by 4,000 or 5,000 pounds of metal and you have impact resistance. On a motorcycle, everything has to work 100% of the time or you risk having a very serious get off. And, you know, investing is the same way. Many people think all about the profits, but if you protect against the risk from the very beginning, you never have to worry about the get off. You never have to worry about the train wreck. You never have to worry about the correction. In fact, when you get big down markets like we've had because of the coronavirus, for example, you can step back and have the freedom to invest, to buy, to confidently plan for your future as opposed to run for the hills with your tail between your legs.
That's curious. So a bunch of different questions popped into my head. So I'm going to do my best to ask one at a time.
Okay.
As we're talking about this, and I think that that's right, you know, just this morning, as a matter of fact, you know, I use stop losses to protect some of my gains. And in pre-market, it gapped down for some reason. And so it triggered my stop, but I had to run right back into it. You know what I mean? And because I knew that I had picked it properly.
There you go.
And so because I knew that and I was confident about it and I wasn't worried about the silliness of what people do, I was able to get back in and everything was fine. So I like that. But I think that my question, I guess, is so understanding the tools and the tool set that you were describing and understanding how things work. It's easy to get into a stock, but can you use those same tools to justify an exit? And how would you select an exit point for yourself?
Well, of course you can, Heather. So the many people think about investing as a very difficult process.
Right.
It doesn't have to be. If you just very simply line up with the unstoppable trends, the must-have companies, and you keep an eye on risk management, you know, your exits are a pre-planned, or at least they should be, a pre-planned part of your investing strategy. We spend more time in this country trying to figure out which washing machine to buy than most people do which stock to pick. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem because you're likely to hang on to the washing machine for 5, maybe 8 years, but you're going to hang on to a stock potentially for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, maybe even pass it on to your children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren. So, you know, exiting a stock to me comes down to one simple question. Are the reasons for which I bought it still intact? And if so, then I don't care. I'm going to stay in. I don't care about the average ups and downs, because if the reasons why I bought that stock are still valid and still important and still there, then you know what? The up and downs, the daily volatility really doesn't concern me at all. Now, on the other hand, if I look at that same stock and I say, okay, are the reasons why I bought this stock still intact? And the answer is no. I don't care whether I'm up 4,000% or down. I mean, I really don't care, because I'm out. I'm in the wind immediately. If the reasons for which I bought the stock no longer exist,
okay,
then I'm done. And I never look back. There's no regrets. I don't want to be second guessing myself. And all of those things are very tempting, but all of those things, Heather, are very emotional overlays. And that's really what screws up most investors, is the emotional overtone of, oh my gosh, did I do the right thing? Did I pick the right stock? Have I made the right move? Well, the only person that can answer that is the one that looks out in the mirror every day at you. That's the person that's your biggest enemy. It's not Wall Street. It's not the Fed.
Right.
It's not the Chinese,
we get it. I mean, that's what this whole show is predicated on, to get out of our own way.
Exactly. You know, and it's the person in the mirror who's the big problem. So, you know, again, I'm a real fan of the keep it simple process. And one of the great elements in my career that's led to the most success has been the ability to keep things simple, keep them focused, and really stay true to what I am trying to achieve. Never mind what Wall Street says I should do. Never mind what I read in a paper. Never mind what I see in a chat room. You know, if I'm going from point A to point B, all I have to do is figure out how I'm going to get there, which stocks I need to do it, and what does that look like?
Okay. So is speed irrelevant, or does speed matter?
Yes. To me, yes. And here's why. You know, I know a lot of people who like to go really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, you're going to wipe out. They're going to lose control. They're going to get careless. There's going to be something stupid that happens, an extraneous event they can't control. You know, day trading is great if you're wired that way. I know some very, very successful, extremely wealthy day traders. On the other hand, I know an awful lot of people who thought they were great day traders who are not great day traders. And in fact, they're considerably less wealthy now as a result of having tried it. On the other hand, I do know plenty of investors who have come from all different backgrounds. Anybody can be taught to invest, but very few people can be taught to day trade.
Mm-hmm. So the reason why I'm asking you this, because since we're on this motorcycle analogy, and I've been motorcycle licensed since I was 18, but I was riding before I was even driving. So, and that's just, you know, dirt bikes are a thing here in Arizona. we have the great outdoors and the desert, like, and back then you only had to be home when the streetlights came on or you ran out of gas. So,
right.
So we were gone and we were out exploring. But one of the things, and you mentioned going fast, everything has to work right. So you mentioned that a little bit ago. But I'm thinking in terms of the fundamentals and the tool set, and I'm thinking in terms of skills. And so I remember when I went to go take my driving test, they didn't sit on the back and see how fast I could go. What they were concerned about was, could I do figure eights in the parking lot? Could I be in upshift to second gear, but be no faster than 15 miles an hour? And I had to drive at this stoplight, and the stoplight was either stop on a dime in this certain window, or you had to turn left or turn right. And it was a sharp turn. Like you just had to drop and go. It was a knee dragger thing.
Yep.
And if you had never done that, you weren't passing this test, and you couldn't hit your pegs. You couldn't put your foot down. There were all of these requirements, you know, and if you couldn't do figure eights at idle speed, you know, without putting your foot down or over braking, and you had to upshift by a certain mark on the thing. Does that exist? I mean, is that something, if we master the slow part of investing, will it scale for us?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I think that's a very, very important point, Heather, because if you can get the basics right, you can accomplish anything with your money. And where people, in my experience, and having helped at this point millions of investors around the world over the last 37 years in doing this, you know, in global markets, the people who tend to flame out, tend to make mistakes, tend to have the most expensive boo-boos are the ones who tend to try to go fast when they're not trained to do it or prepared to do it or mentally aware of doing it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what I think that comes down to from an investing perspective is they mismatch their expectations with either their skill set or their investment choice. And I'll give you a great example. So right now there's a lot of discussion about companies like Amazon or Microsoft or Apple. And a lot of people say, oh, these stocks are all fantastic companies, but they're all too expensive. And my response is, compared to what? Why? Yeah. What are you talking about? Because any stock in its rearview mirror is going to be cheaper over time. So what they're really finding, what they're really asking is, or really saying is, they don't have enough understanding to manage the risk associated with owning a stock. That's what they're
or
really
it's outside of maybe their personal financial thermostat.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is, there are ways in today's market to manage that. Now, back in the Stone Age, when I started my career, we did not have that ability. You know, you either bought it or you sold it. And that was the end of the discussion. Now you have ETFs, you have mutual funds, you have options, you have all kinds of different orders, you have weekly options. You can stripe this thing any way you want. So the point is, my point that I want to make is that any investor, I can take any investor, regardless of their psychological profile, regardless of their economic wherewithal, regardless of whether they're young, old, starting late, finishing early, you know, I don't care what it is. If we can get to the heart of what drives them emotionally and physiologically and psychologically, we can turn them into a reasonably successful investor over time. Okay. And it comes down to, you know, how are you wired? What do you look for? You know, certain people, for example, like you, like muscle cars and sport bikes. You know, I know plenty of other people, like when I'm buying a motorcycle, for example, I've got stuff that would light my hair on fire, you know, 170, 180 miles an hour stock on the, you know, the salt flats if I wanted to go that fast.
I love but, the salt flats.
I'm not doing that. I'm riding because I enjoy it. So, you know, I'm the teetotaler out there. When I go riding with these youngsters now, you know, and I mean youngsters by anybody who's less older than I am, you know, I tell them, look, you guys go, I'll get there eventually. And, you know, I do. But the point is, everybody changes over time. Everybody has a unique, innate skill set. And all you have to do as an investor is find that. Then you know which investments apply. Mm-hmm. Most people try to find the investments and force them to fit. That's like a square peg in a round hole. Doesn't work.
Okay, so you brought up a good point. So how do we know when it's time in our lives to change our investment strategy? Obviously, when we're young, we're invincible. We want to go fast. So how do we start identifying those trading or investing transitions to become a better investor and be consistent with what's important to us?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. There's I think, a number of things.
Thank you for watching Unlock Your Wealth today. To find out Keith Fitzgerald's answer to my question and for the rest of our conversation, Tune in next week.
UnlockYourWealthToday.com is produced by Heather Wagenhals and the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. UnlockYourWealthToday.com and its affiliates are copyrighted 2018 with all rights reserved. For more information on the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series, please visit our website at www.unlockyourwealthtoday.com.